I also drink a lot of coconut water for its nutritional and energetic value. It tastes best when straight from the coconut. It really clears my mind. The first 2 days of a liquid diet can be challenging because, well, you're hungry. For me, though, it's all worth it. The detoxing gives me clarity and more energy. But I don't do fasts as a form of weight control. I maintain my weight through my lifestyle. I eat clean, and I drink a lot of water and tea throughout the day. Whether I'm eating or exercising, it's all about gaining energy and clarity while re-centering myself. We are what we eat. This won't come as news to most people, but I take it a step further. We are also how we eat. It took me years to understand that it isn't just what I put in my mouth that matters. It's also how I am eating, how quickly, but also my emotional state. If I'm anxious or joyful at mealtime, these feelings will be ingested as well. The attitude I like to bring to my meals is appreciation. Appreciation for the miracle of nature, like the little seeds that grew into the vegetables in my salad, or a beautiful tree that has shared its fruit with me. Taking the time to bring a full awareness to meals can deepen our respect for life and nature. When we're more attuned to what we eat, we become even more aware that nature gives us every single element that allows our bodies to flourish. Have you ever imagined not having food? Or outside of fasting, gone more than 1 or 2 days without eating anything? If you have, and someone offered you something to eat, at that moment it would be more valuable to you than anything on earth. For a long time, I was thoughtless about food and eating. I ate automatically and unconsciously. I was hungry, so I fed myself. I ate in a hurry, too, barely chewing my food, especially if I was really hungry. I hardly took a breath between bites. Mealtimes for me were opportunities to catch up on phone calls or take meetings. No wonder I felt sluggish and a little sick after. What had my mom always told us when we were young? To chew our food well, at least 20 times. To this day, when our family gets together, my mom is very quiet when she is eating, really taking in every bite. The way a person eats says a lot about them. What is expressed on the outside is often a reflection of what's on the inside. By now, you know meditation has taught me many things, in particular the importance and magic of being fully present in any given moment. When we're present, we see, hear, feel, taste, and experience everything more clearly. I don't eat as slowly as my mom does. I'm still working on it. But my intention is to be aware, to try and turn every meal into a form of meditation. Once in a while, meals can be a great time to practice awareness by staying silent, focusing on your food, paying attention to your breathing, and watching where your mind wanders as you eat. Life is busy, so I don't get to eat every meal this way, but when I do, I feel great. I also believe it is important to take a moment to ask ourselves what emotions we bring to our food. Do we appreciate what's in front of us? Do we feel grateful? Do we feel guilty about what we're about to eat? Or can we eat our meal with pleasure and enjoyment? I realize that emotions surrounding food are complicated and that everyone has their own thing. All of this is to say that sitting down for a meal can be a great opportunity to experience presence and gratitude. It's worth trying out. Sit in silence. Say a short blessing for the food that's in front of you and where it came from. Don't turn it into a contest to see who can eat more slowly, but do take in each bite with an appreciation of all the nutrients you are taking in. See how you feel once you're done. Life is so full and so busy for most of us that we seldom take the time to relax and become centered. But we all need to eat. So why not make mealtime a more mindful experience? Chapter 8. Know Thyself. Someone once told me a story about a frog in a well. It's an old story, and maybe you've heard it before, but here it goes. Once there was a frog who lived at the bottom of a well. He spent most of his time in the water and the shadows, and from his vantage point, the world seemed familiar and complete and perfect. I know everything there is to know about everything, the frog thought. I can see every star and comet and constellation. I can tell the difference between day, night, dusk, and dawn. I know every cloud, every star, and every passing bird. I know everything there is to know about life. One day the frog got curious, so he decided to take a leap of faith to check if there was anything beyond the well. When he landed outside, he couldn't believe the whole new world around him. When he looked up at the sky, instead of seeing the small, hole-shaped version of reality he'd known his entire life, he saw a huge, ever-changing, and completely exhilarating world. There were more stars, comets, clouds, constellations, and birds than he knew existed. There was grass, trees, rocks, and an infinite horizon. He was suddenly aware of the smallness of his own body. I love this story. It says so much in such a simple way. I think about it a lot because since I left home to begin modeling, I've been on a quest to understand my purpose in life. I was intent on getting out of the well. I wanted to expand myself and experience as much of life as I possibly could. I've always loved learning new things and digging deep into subjects that interest me, knowing that with everything I was studying, there would always be more to learn. I often feel like the more I learn, the less I know. Who I was at age 14 isn't who I was at 20, or who I am today at 38, or who I'll be a decade from now. But there are some things that never change, like my ongoing process to deepen my understanding of myself, other people, and the world around me. The eighth and last chapter, Know Thyself, is really the lesson that lies beneath all the others. What could be more important than knowing ourselves and continually expanding our self-awareness? Unless we make the effort to understand the many facets of our nature, we won't discover what gives us joy and purpose. What you seek is seeking you, Rumi once wrote. My searching has always included books about history, religion, metaphysics, mysticism. I read books on Christianity, Buddhism, and Hinduism. I read the Bhagavad Gita and Siddhartha. I read about the lives of people who inspired me, like Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Krishnamurti. Once I started, it was hard for me to stop. What was qi? What was dharma? What was numerology? What were chakras? What did the ancient Egyptians know? What about the Mayans? How did Machu Picchu come to exist? When I began meditating and practicing yoga, I entered new worlds and belief systems, and I kept traveling. Sometimes my travels were philosophical, sometimes they were psychological. Sometimes they had to do with me challenging myself to face down my fears. Sometimes they were geographical. For example, living in Japan when I was a teenager, and later in New York, and traveling the world on the show circuit, I observed many different cultures, habits, and beliefs, and learned that there really is no right way to live. In the end, each one of us is responsible for our own life and for the reality we are helping to create. We each need to decide what kind of human we want to be and where we want to focus our attention. What do we believe? What are values we want to live by? What kind of life do we want to have? In the course of my reading and travels, I've learned that there are some popular notions that are really quite old. Know thyself is inscribed on the Temple of Apollo at Delphi, and may actually have been passed down from the ancient Egyptians. In this book, I talk about gratitude, but the Bhagavad Gita addressed this same subject 6,000 years ago. Meditation and yoga have been around for centuries. I don't pretend to own the concepts in this book, I'm simply doing my best to live them in my own life. For example, the idea that all people have both male and female energies inside them, and that internal balance is when these two forces are in harmony, comes from Taoism, which dates back to the 6th century BC. In Taoism, the male part is called Yang, and the female part is called Yin. The concept that both Yin and Yang reside within us probably seems logical to some people, but counterintuitive to others. If we identify as a man or a woman, doesn't it make sense that everything a man does is masculine and everything a woman does is feminine? Not to my way of thinking. Whether you are a man or a woman, each of us has directive, active qualities, yang, and receptive, passive qualities, yin. When we are equally comfortable with both strength and sensitivity, action and waiting, listening and speaking, these two extremes within us form balance. That's not to say that attaining balance is easy. Starting at a very young age, we are given messages from parents, siblings, classmates, friends, and the culture telling us how little boys and girls should behave. Boys are meant to be strong, stoic, competitive, and ambitious. Girls are meant to be more receptive, polite, supportive, and empathetic. But how many girls, boys, men, and women fit into one category or another? I do think that everyone can agree that men and women are not the same. Masculine energy does tend to be assertive and directive, while feminine energy tends to be more receptive and intuitive. Male energy needs to conquer and win, and female energy needs to nurture and protect. Both these energies are extraordinary, as long as we work with them consciously, in a balanced way, for the good of everybody. In my experience, the actualization of the male is power. The actualization of the female is love. By balancing the two and combining power with love, we can begin to create genuine positive change in the world and in ourselves. To do that, men don't need to become more like women, nor do women need to become more like men. Instead, both genders just need to become more conscious of the masculine and feminine energies that already reside within them. Instead of denying their female energy, men need to embrace it. Instead of suppressing their male energy, women should celebrate it. What if you don't identify as male or female, or you love another person of the same sex? Does that mean you're missing out? Hardly. Love is love. If you can embrace your own masculine and feminine energies and find a partner with that same balance, each of us can find wholeness and then share and learn together. When I was young, I remember being aware of the intricate dance of male-female balance with my parents. On the surface, my dad was much more emotional than my mom. On Sundays, when he brought out his guitar and serenaded us with old gaúcho songs, his eyes would fill with tears. My dad inspired my creativity, my sensitivity, my idealism, and my lifelong sense of purpose, the idea that anything is possible. He encouraged me to dream big, to reject labels, and to be fearless. He still does. He's always been a kid at heart, a little playful, and I'm that way too. As for the importance of hard work, focus, discipline, and perseverance, all that comes from my mom. From her, I learned not to waste, never to throw anything away if it could be repurposed, to be appreciative, and to finish what was on my plate, and to donate anything I no longer needed. She taught me the value of things, and how to never take anything for granted, and how to be independent. My mom gave all of us a go-and-do-it attitude. That's probably why today I have my own drill and my own toolbox. If something needs to be fixed or hung, I'm the person who'll do it. At least, I will try before considering calling in a professional. Earlier, I wrote that as a teenager, I spent a lot of time studying Taoism, the Chinese philosophy that teaches about the yin and yang. It was both confusing and inspiring. What was the relationship between the sun and the moon? The positive and the negative, the darkness and the light, Were they opposing forces or variations? Over time, I came to believe that our masculine and feminine energies are not separate, but instead two halves of a perfect whole. It can be easy to doubt this when we think about how our culture treats boys and girls who don't meet conventional expectations. Even if parents don't come right out and tell their sons and daughters to act a certain way, children pick up nonverbal cues. What is more destructive than to tell a child that he or she shouldn't feel what they're feeling? Does that mean if you're a boy, you're not allowed to cry? Does it mean if you're a girl, you can't be competitive or ambitious? As a result, many boys grow up believing it's wrong to express their emotions, and many girls feel they should suppress their ambitions. But why are we here if not to experience the full range of what it is to be human? Meaning both our masculine and feminine energies. Is it any wonder yoga appeals to many women who, remembering how as girls they were told to cover themselves up and quiet their voices, now hold out their arms in warrior pose? Throughout their lives, men and women give and take, lead and follow, direct and receive. If we can't figure out how to yoke together these two energies, I believe we're incomplete and out of balance, which can lead to all kinds of negative behaviors. At this time, I believe we're still living in a world where the masculine energy is out of balance, a world where some men continue to abuse power, men motivated by vanity, ego, and greed, men willing to sacrifice love, consideration for others, and care for the earth for their own short-term gains. Power without love is a bad combination, and it is unsustainable. We read about this every day in the headlines. Rampant inequality, cruelty toward the less fortunate, floating islands of plastic garbage in the ocean. This dominance of masculine energy has disconnected us from the feminine side and from Mother Earth. Our survival comes from our Earth's natural resources, so wouldn't it be smart for us to use them wisely so we can continue to utilize and enjoy them for many generations? Using up our natural resources without the awareness that they are finite moves us toward extinction. We need to make sustainable choices so our Earth has time to replenish. Because we haven't been paying attention, the Earth is sending us stronger and stronger messages. Tsunamis, floods, earthquakes, droughts, erupting volcanoes. We forget that when the Earth gets sick, we do too. Over the years, many books have emphasized that the male elements are fire and air, while earth and water are female. As the biggest archetype of the female, the earth is loving, nurturing, sacrificing, and compassionate. She gives and gives, expecting almost nothing back. In return, some men use their power to take advantage of her, as they often do with women. For the sake of dominance, for the sake of power and ego, or maybe because of many years of history and repeated behaviors, they thought it's their right. Finally, truth about the way many men have misused their power to abuse and exploit women is coming to light. Violence, pornography, haters and bullies venting on social media and on comment boards. Our culture is coming face to face with its own shadows. But what are shadows anyway? The absence of light. I believe the light contains positive attitudes and actions, and as we become more conscious of the changes we need to make, the light will get stronger. It can be easy to want to avoid what is ugly and negative, but the fact that many brave women have publicly addressed their exploitation gives me hope. As I said earlier, I believe genuine positive change in the world can only take place when we combine power with love. We need them both. Power is energy. Power creates. Power is the spark, the surge. Love, by contrast, is a container. It nourishes. It helps a seed grow and thrive. The mix of the masculine and feminine, or power and love, is a combination that I've been working on synthesizing for years. Sometimes I'm more in tune with my masculine energy. Other times I'm more connected to the feminine. How do I tell if I'm out of balance? When I'm too directive. I find myself pushing to reach my goals at the expense of other people. To reconnect with my feminine side, first I take a few breaths, and then I ask myself a few questions. How am I reaching my goals? How is what I'm doing affecting my children and my husband and the rest of my family and everyone in the community? How will my actions affect the earth, not just today, but in the future? I consistently strive to balance the masculine and feminine energies within me. Without the masculine energy, I won't be able to accomplish my goals. Without the feminine energy, I lack empathy, compassion, consideration, and perspective. I believe that only by finding the balance between the two can we live an empowered and loving life. I was a tomboy growing up. I still think of myself that way. I was athletic and naturally aggressive. I liked being up at the net spiking a volleyball. Most of my friends at school were boys, too, but not the cool ones. They had no interest in me. I must have been around 12 or 13 when I decided I'd rather be tough than fragile. It might have been a way of setting myself apart from my twin sister, who was more delicate than I was, more of a girl's girl. If a boy told me I couldn't run or climb as well as he could, my response was, "Actually, I can. Watch me." My younger sister Gabi had a big personality and a big mouth to go along with it. She was always speaking her mind to the boys in her class, and if they gave her a hard time, I would always stick up for her by saying, "Listen, if you ever talk that way to my sister again, it is over for you. Do you hear me? Over." I have no idea why they felt intimidated by me. Maybe it was my masculine energy, or maybe it was because I was tall. Growing up, my sisters and I were all very connected to our masculine energy. The same quality stayed with me when I began modeling. The fashion world was the perfect setting for me to experience my masculine and feminine energies combined. Modeling is the only industry I know of where women get paid more than men. At work, I transformed from being a tomboy who felt more comfortable wearing jeans, t-shirts, and baggy clothes into channeling whatever look the job required. I was direct, matter-of-fact, and task-oriented, and I became even more so as time went on. But of course, the modeling industry is centered on the idealized female form. If my job was to be sexy or flirtatious, I slid into my own feminine energy. Modeling is feminine in that you need to be intuitively aware of the language of your own body. A model needs to be expressive with eyes, hands, and mouth, or the angle of the hips. It's like being an actress in a silent movie. It was not until I became a mother that I deeply connected to my feminine energy. I felt like a lioness, and that my home had become a cave, and I'd do anything to defend and preserve my cubbies. Giving birth is such an everyday occurrence, but when it happens to you, it's magical and profound. If it weren't for women, there would be no future, as they are the only ones who can nourish life into being. When I met my husband, Tom, in December 2006 on a blind date, I learned quickly that he was a warrior in his sport, pro football. What surprised me, and what I fell most in love with over time, was his kindness, gentleness, his sweetness. Tom was and is a solid character. He was as close to his parents and sisters as I am to mine, and I could tell he was very loving and had strong values. It took me no time to realize he would be a good family man. At the time we started dating, both of our careers were in high gear. Like me, Tom was 100% dedicated to his job. Not that I really understood what football was back then, or what being an NFL quarterback meant. I knew only that Tom loved doing what he did, and was committed to his team, the New England Patriots, and to sustaining his own amazing performance. His goal, he told me, was to play for 10 more years and retire. Then he wanted to focus on having a family. I was only 26, And to me, that sounded like a great plan, as I also felt I still had so much I wanted to accomplish in my career. But life unfolds in unexpected ways. The only constant is change. 2 months into our relationship, Tom told me that his ex-girlfriend was pregnant. The very next day, the news was everywhere, and I felt my world had been turned upside down. Needless to say, that wasn't an easy time, but it was a time that brought about so much growth. Later that year, little Jack was born, making my heart expand in ways I didn't know was possible. Jack, my bonus child, has been a huge gift and blessing in my life. In fact, I credit Jack with accelerating Tom's and my growing up in so many ways. The two of us agreed that Jack should have siblings closer to his own age, and not 10 years younger. With Jack in our lives, our priorities definitely started to shift. I wanted to be there for Jack and Tom and do whatever I could to create stability in their lives and help them to have a close relationship. Tom especially needed my support during that time, and whenever I'm in a position to be of help to anyone, especially someone I love, I will be there. The truth is, helping and being supportive of others always makes me feel good. I also know that in order to gain something, very often you have to give something up. We decided to start our own family sooner rather than later. A couple of years later, we were married, I became pregnant, and soon we were busy growing our family between New England and Los Angeles. Before Tom and I were married, we talked a lot about how we wanted our relationship to develop, and I expressed that I wanted an interdependent relationship, not a codependent one. I see marriage as two people walking side by side, growing individually and together, never giving up the essence of who they are or their dreams to please or pacify their partner. I wanted someone who would accept me fully for who I was, someone who inspired and challenged me to be the best version of myself. I wanted to be that same person for my husband. I saw our relationship as a safe port we could both return to for shelter when we needed it, while making sure we both had the freedom to actualize our own dreams. More than that, I wanted a marriage of equals, one based on love, respect, and trust. I still believe that a marriage of equals, where two people are equally simultaneously driven in their careers, is possible, but not as easy when the kids are little. Children should come first. I had always dreamed of having a family, and when that dream came true, my children naturally became my priority. I believe women can do everything, just not all at the same time. We must prioritize. Because the Patriots play in Boston, and Tom's time wasn't his own, I saw it this way. My job as a model had a lot more flexibility than his job. New York may be the center of the fashion industry, but modeling isn't a 9-to-5 job, and I didn't need to live in Manhattan to keep doing what I was doing. I also felt I had already accomplished a lot, at least in the fashion industry. I didn't feel the need to keep on proving myself. It hadn't been easy for me to get to the top of the mountain, but after years of hard work, I'd made it. I asked myself, do I need one more magazine cover? Do I need one more campaign? Do I need to make one more personal appearance? Not really. My priority became my family and experiencing them to the fullest. I wanted to build the best possible relationship with Tom, Jack, and our children. I love nesting, and I'm also a peacemaker who likes making everything better, easier, and more harmonious for the people I love. Many women probably know what I'm talking about. I never looked back, either. Our son Benny was born in December 2009, and 2 months later, when football season was over, Tom, Benny, and I moved out to Los Angeles, where Jack was living, so we could all be with Jack more regularly. But by the early summer, our family was back in Boston in time for training camp. A new marriage, a new baby, a new life in New England. It was a big transition for me. I didn't know anyone in Boston, and living there made it harder for me to do my work. But I was in love with Tom, and I wanted to make our marriage work. So what I'd worked so hard to achieve, the thing I'd done since the age of 14, had to take a back seat. It wasn't a completely smooth transition. My career had been centered on just one person's needs, mine. I could come and go, work and travel here and there, and do what I wanted to do. That chapter of my life was replaced by the needs of a growing family. With the arrival of Benny and Vivi, I found out quickly that being a mother was a lot more work than modeling. Any mother with little kids knows that the job is consuming. Tom's schedule during football season is so demanding that I take on most of the family responsibilities. I think of this stage of my life as the valley, not because it is in any way negative, but because once you've been on top of the mountain, there's nowhere else to go but back down. On top of a mountain, it's always sunny and bright, and you get a big view. In contrast, life in a valley is quieter and more contained. The valley gives me the opportunity to understand a different side of myself, and to devote myself to being the best wife and best mother I can be, all while I get to experience the love of my children. I was fortunate, though. Unlike many full-time mothers, I'd had the opportunity to start working at a very young age, and my many years of hard work had given me financial freedom. I still have the opportunity to travel for contract work, and any other free time I have dedicated to the causes that matter to me. Those jobs and trips are like quick visits back to the mountaintop, whether I was walking the runway at the Rio Olympics or giving a speech about the environment before the United Nations. But I turn down most modeling jobs. Either Tom has a big game, or Benny has a play at school, or maybe Jack will be with us for the weekend, or Vivi has a bad cough. For whatever the reason, the scheduling doesn't always work, and my family comes first. When the kids were very young, there were times when I felt overwhelmed or conflicted, sometimes a little depressed, though I tried my best to be strong. I felt the massive new responsibility of motherhood. I wanted to do my best and to do it right. The thing is, I was an inexperienced mom, in on-the-job training. Plus, I sometimes felt torn, since I knew I had so much more I wanted to create in the world. Tom helped out as much as possible, but during the season, he's gone by 6 in the morning, and I usually don't see him until dinner. Thank God my mom stayed for a month after Benny was born. Without my mom, Fafi, and Myra, my friend and doula, who, after a lot of convincing, became our babysitter for a while, I don't think I could have managed as well as I did. At the same time, I'd been connected my whole life to my own masculine energy. Accomplish, accomplish, accomplish. Go, go, go. When I was pregnant with Benny, I decided to learn how to fly a helicopter. Talk about embracing my masculine energy. I found a local pilot named Stu, and for the next 3 months took an intensive course in navigation, weather patterns, stratus clouds, cumulus clouds, and the effects of condensation on flying. I learned how to fly at night and in bad weather, how to land a helicopter in a confined area, and talk with the air traffic controllers in the tower. I put in the 60 hours needed to get certified as a private helicopter pilot, though I stopped short of getting my license, since Tom and I both felt it was too dangerous for me to do the final test, which involved making an emergency landing with no throttle. Still, it was fun going through the whole process. I was flying an R-44 helicopter, the bird, as Stu and I called it, a few days before Benny was born. The valley also reminds me of the importance of the feminine element in the life of any family. If you're a man or a woman who works outside the home, you lead two very different lives. The first life, your outside life, takes place out in the world. It centers on drive and achievement and making a living to support your family. The second life is your inside life. This one is focused on taking care of the house and the children, keeping the calendar, staying on top of a million details like babysitters, school stuff, doctor's appointments, and social obligations, and making sure everyone is doing okay and everything is running smoothly. Most men are focused on their outside lives, and many women are too. But for anyone to succeed and thrive in their outside life, they need to have a strong, stable inside life. That's why if I ever hear someone saying, "She's just a mom," it makes me angry. Being just a mom is the foundation of everything. Being just a mom ensures that our children have the foundation and support they need to succeed, not just at work, but at life. Millions of just moms are busy raising future men and women who will someday influence the world in either positive or negative ways. Our culture likes to treat the daily multitasking that women perform as something to be expected. They're not. There are a lot of mothers out there who make everything possible and everything happen, and I think they're amazing. As time went on, I became more and more aware that I was out of balance. With two small children, a household to oversee, and a husband working all day and sometimes out of town for away games, I realized I wasn't in a very healthy place. That's when I started making small changes. Instead of staying by myself at home caring for the children, I would invite a friend over for tea, then another friend for a walk. When I went back to work, I took Benny and Vivi along with me so I could breastfeed. It was an intense period. I was getting almost no sleep at night and working all day. I felt like a zombie. One time, I remember breastfeeding Benny on a long plane trip to Brazil and feeling like the worst mother in the world, even though I knew I'd feel even worse if I'd left him at home. Still, going back to work after having children felt like I was going on vacation. Slowly, I began to regain my own balance of masculine and feminine energies. I was also able to see how this same balance was forming in my own children. Jack and Benny are already connected to their more sensitive, intuitive sides. At 5, Vivi is already very strong, and her style is my way or the highway. She is single-minded and driven to reach her goals. At the same time, she is extremely loving and extremely smart. She has her father wrapped around her finger, and she knows it, too. She is always so happy and sunny and joyful that we all say Vivi is skipping through life. Benny, who's 8, loves music and art and singing, and building with Legos. He loves animals and the earth. So one night after I had just returned from a trip to the Amazon, we were talking about what each of us could do to help protect life on Earth. He asked me what he could do. I suggested that instead of receiving gifts for his birthday, he could ask his friends to use the money and make donations to help to protect his favorite animals. So for the past 2 years on his birthday, his friends made donations to help him save the elephants and the whales. He has a lot of empathy, and also likes spending time alone dreaming, in the same way I did at his age. Of the 3, Jack, the oldest, is the most responsible, and also has a healthy balance of masculine and feminine energies. He's extremely dedicated, loves playing soccer, and once told his dad that someday he wants to go to Michigan, Tom's alma mater. Of course, Tom beamed. Like his father, he is also kind, sensitive, and generous. I feel so lucky I get to have them all in my life. I love them so much. My role, as I see it, is to be their guardian and to allow each one to realize his or her innate strengths and talents. I also try to set an example with my own masculine and feminine energies so they can see I'm both strong and nurturing. Now that the kids are older and in school, I know that soon I'll be ready to begin climbing another mountain. I learned I'm good at climbing mountains. I've never lived in the valley for this long, but I wouldn't give back the time I spent there for anything. My children have given me a greater sense of purpose and motivation. Before they were born, I was passionate about ecological and environmental causes, but now I bring 100 times more dedication, drive, and urgency to that same work. Having children made it even more important to me to help make the world a better place. Recently, Tom and I revisited the conversation we had when we first got married, the one where he told me he would play for 10 more years than retire. But I acknowledge that it's been better for both of us to think of that conversation as a map, not as the destination. Today, Tom is playing better than he ever has, and he still loves what he's doing. I have never met anyone in my whole life who loves anything as much as my husband loves playing football. I am in awe of the commitment, focus, and tireless dedication he puts into being the best at what he does. At the same time, we both know that an athlete's career is limited. I worry about his physical health. Like any wife, I am scared for him, and for our family too, because football is such a physical sport. But I am not going to tell him to stop doing what he loves. His dedication and discipline and commitment to being the best at what he does are some of the reasons I love him. Tom will retire when he feels it's time. The decision has to come from him. In the end, if Tom is happy, we are all happy. One of the things about being a woman, a wife, and a mother is that I'm always looking out for what is best, not just for me or for Tom, but for everybody in our family. What is the best way to support and fulfill everybody's needs as we move forward? In that sense, women have a lot in common with the earth. What matters most to me right now, it's my number one priority, in fact, is that Benny, Vivi, and Jack grow up together in a stable environment. That they can grow and feel part of a community and make good, lasting friendships. I want them all to feel safe and loved, and to know they can always count on one another, that they have a strong, solid foundation in our family and our community, and that Tom and I will always be there for them, no matter what. Wherever the two of us end up living, home isn't a literal place or structure, with paint or bricks or windows or rugs. Home, to me, is about memories, emotions, and amazing moments. The apartments and houses I've lived in are settings for love, good times, all of us spending time together and laughing over a meal. Home, for me, is a place inside me. It's wherever my family is. Sometimes I tell people that my husband and I love each other so much we got married twice. Tom and I both come from strong, solid, very close-knit Roman Catholic families, especially my mom's family. She even had a sister who was a nun. Our parents have been married for decades. It mattered a lot to our families that Tom and I had a traditional marriage ceremony in a church, and of course, we both wanted to honor their wishes. Our first ceremony took place on February 26, 2009, when we said our vows inside St. Monica's Catholic Church in Santa Monica, California. Aside from Tom, me, and our pastor Lloyd, who married us, the only attendees were our parents and Jack, who was two at the time, and the ring bearer. A couple of our good friends were there too. One was in charge of taking photographs, though during the ceremony he got so emotional that most of the pictures ended up out of focus. After the ceremony, we all drove back to our house for salad, cake, and steaks that Tom grilled. That was our wedding reception. Growing up, I don't remember having any fairy tale fantasies about getting married. I never pictured myself in a big white dress, for example, or surrounded by bridesmaids. No, I imagined my marriage being more unconventional than that. If I got married, it would be in nature, which is my real church, and the ceremony would be fun, beautiful, and informal. I would go barefoot. I would say my vows right as the sun was going down. The first time I visited Costa Rica, I fell in love with its raw nature and thought, I hope I can live here someday. Costa Rica reminded me so much of Brazil. The weather, the humidity, the same kind, loving, simple people. There are monkeys and birds in the trees, dolphins and pelicans in the ocean, and millions of butterflies. The landscape is damp and alive, as if it's breathing in and out. In my 20s, when I began making more money, I bought a plot of land in a remote section of the country and began having a house built. I thought it would be the perfect setting for a wedding. In the weeks before our church ceremony, Tom and I spent a lot of time talking about what we wanted in our relationship. As I said earlier, I expressed to Tom that the last thing I wanted from our marriage was codependence. When you feel you need to save the other person. When you spend the whole time worrying about his needs to the point that they subsume or become your own. When you feel the need to rescue him or fix him. What could be more dangerous than being in a relationship where your partner can't breathe without you, or when a partner needs you to make him whole, or when he's responsible for filling in parts of yourself you lack, and you lose yourself and your own identity? No, our marriage not only had to be based on love, respect, and honesty, it had to be interdependent, where two strong people love each other, but never to the point of sacrificing their own happiness or values. To me, marriage, or any relationship, comes down to two people walking side by side through life, learning alone and together, and sharing what they've learned with each other as they keep growing and expanding. I wasn't Tom. Tom wasn't me. We loved each other, but we weren't the same person. For the rest of our lives, we would both be changing. So many marriages I know of end when one partner accuses the other of just that, changing. But what are we supposed to do if not keep changing throughout our lives? Trees lose their leaves in the fall, sleep in the winter, bud in the spring, and come alive in the summer. The sun comes out, followed by rain or snow or clouds or more sun. People are similar. As I found out when I was living in the valley, there is a natural rhythm to everything, a time to contract and a time to expand, a rhythm that can repeat many times over a single lifetime. Just as I'd once imagined, Tom's and my wedding ceremony in Costa Rica was, as I hoped, fun, beautiful, and informal, more spiritual than religious. I've known a lot of brides who get stressed out in the weeks before their weddings, worrying about the photographer or the food or the bartender or which bridesmaid was wearing what dress. I didn't want to think about those things. What I did think about in the weeks before the ceremony was what I'd admired in other marriages I knew. Similar to the balance of masculine and female energies inside all of us, the ideal marriage is a dance in which both partners take turns giving and taking, leading and following, directing and receiving for the rest of their lives. I believe that a woman who has those two energies in balance will attract a partner with that same balance. Remember, ideally, each one of us is both powerful and loving, strong and compassionate. I've always loved poetry, and a month before our wedding in Costa Rica, I found a poem that really spoke to me. It's from Khalil Gibran's The Prophet, and it was written almost 100 years ago. You were born together, and together you shall be forevermore. You shall be together when the white wings of death scatter your days. Aye, you shall be together even in the silent memory of God. But let there be spaces in your togetherness, and let the winds of the heavens dance between you. Love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be a moving sea between the shores of your souls. Fill each other's cup, but drink not from one cup. Give one another of your bread, but eat not from the same loaf. Sing and dance together and be joyous, but let each one of you be alone, even as the strings of a lute are alone, though they quiver with the same music. Give your hearts, but not into each other's keeping, for only the hand of life can contain your hearts. And stand together, yet not too near together, for the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow. The poem reminded me that two people in love can attain both interdependence and balance. With that balance, you each become a pillar strong enough to sustain love while living side by side. One partner doesn't need to lean on or crash into or merge with the other. A strong pillar stands straight on its own. It's perfect just by being itself, and from that place it chooses to share and to stand with another. Our wedding took place at sunset on a warm day in early April. Before the ceremony, my sister Fafi helped me do my hair. I wore waterproof mascara since I knew I was going to cry, because I always cry. And it wouldn't have been a pretty sight having raccoon eyes at my own wedding. Around 40 people gathered in our open living room, Tom's and my entire extended family, including nieces, and three good friends apiece. On a nearby table strewn with candles and assorted crystals sat two bowls, one containing honey and the other rice. The honey, it is said, would sweeten our future, and the rice anticipates prosperity. Jack was too, and still our ring bearer. I wore a simple white slip dress. My feet were bare. The ceremony was brief, and the last words anyone heard were, "For the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow." There was no formal wedding reception afterward. It was more like a free-for-all, a joyful, relaxed party, just the way I'd always imagined it would be. People ate Mexican food and drank margaritas. They sat or stood in the kitchen, or on the lawn, or by the side of the pool. My sister Pachi and Tom's sister Julie each read a beautiful poem, and everyone had a slice of the chocolate wedding cake. Tom had made playlists. His had songs by Ray LaMontagne, Amos Lee, James Taylor, and others. And at some point, my friend Nino, whom I've known since my earliest days in New York, and who's like a brother to me, plugged in his iPod. The kids went swimming in the pool, while guests danced around in their bathing suits. I remember drinking two margaritas, and after two margaritas, you don't remember or care about very much. But I do remember looking for and finding Tom, and though I can't remember who led and who followed, does it matter? We started to dance. We are still dancing and growing through the ups and downs of life. So here's a thought experiment. Imagine what would happen if each one of us knew ourselves as fully and deeply as possible, and that we led each day of our lives consciously and compassionately, without projecting our emotions onto others or allowing our egos to distort reality. If everyone did whatever work was necessary to get to know themselves better and took responsibility for being the best self he or she could be, I believe the world would be a different place, a better place. So where do you even begin? How can you unlock the door? Or to put it another way, how can you jump outside the well? There is no best way. There's your way. There are millions of different ways for us to get to know ourselves, and your method of diving deep is unique to you. Remember, we are all here to learn lessons. In my experience, we get into trouble only when we follow others, instead of following our inner voice and own individual path. Of course, always coming from love while respecting others. As I always remind my children, we must treat others as we would like to be treated. That's why I encourage you to travel, in your head, in your heart, in your beliefs. You could begin by paying close attention to your thoughts, words, and actions, or by starting a meditation practice, or by asking yourself questions, reading books, getting inspired by people whose lives you admire, seeking out others who are wise and compassionate, from whom you can learn new things. Investigating ancient traditions and belief systems. If you're inclined that way, exploring mythology or mysticism. Most of all, try to avoid being judgmental of yourself and other people, and especially being righteous. The world is filled with people who claim that their way of doing things or their belief system is right and others is wrong. Well, how do we even know what's right and what's wrong? In the end, we all have choice. Are we going to believe what other people say is true? Or are we going to choose to search in ourselves to find our truth? Put another way, if you're inside the well, jump. I know, it takes courage. You don't know what's out there. That frog certainly didn't. But once you take the leap, you'll be exposed to more stars and sky than you ever knew existed. You'll land someplace new, and maybe even disorienting. A place that expands and deepens your understanding of yourself, the world, your place in that world, and even doorways to other worlds. Why not explore and go through them too? The universe is infinite, and our understanding of it is so small. Wherever you choose to go, I wish you a safe, exciting journey, and that you may always be connected and guided by love. This is Sunila Nankani. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Lessons, My Path to a Meaningful Life by Giselle Bündchen. This program was directed by Garrett Scott. Executive producer, Juliana Wilson. Text copyright 2018 by Giselle Inc. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.